Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is me, Jonathan Alexander. I'm here to host my show, Life, Love, for Happiness. Today, my guests are Sam Phillips. Are you there, Sam?
Yes, I sure am, Johnny.
And we have DT, who gets hosted with me in the past. Are you there, DT?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Okay, great. Now, I want to ask you this question, Sam. You're the host of The Single Life, am I right?
Yes, I am.
Now, what got you started in doing radio at all? I mean, like, what got you started in it?
Long story short, and I take a very long time to tell a short story, but here we go. I started my career as a teen model. Hold on, start in radio. I have to take notes because I have a feeling you're going to hit me with all kinds of questions, Johnny. Okay. So I started my career as a teen model. And as I started progressing and started doing movies, and I got a set of implants and became a Penthouse Pet centerfold, all my various jobs that I had done from those points forward, they always needed a girl to do promotions. So this girl would be the girl that would represent the movie or the video or the layout and go and do like a television talk show or a radio talk show and represent the project. So I was always picked as that girl and sent around to do these promotions because for some reason I had the gift of gab and I loved to skate the line of almost being semi-indecent but not, and really sexually laden with double entendres is kind of just, I have a dirty mind, and I always was able to parlay it and know where to draw the fine line, so I became like a darling of radio hosts, even beyond going on to promote the project that I had originally gone on for. So Howard Stern, I appeared on his show a bunch of times. A guy named Alan Combs, who, of course, is a talk show host, Hannity and Combs. I think it's Hannity and Combs. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right, you guys?
Hannity and Combs.
No?
I don't know that name, no.
You don't know Fox, Alan Combs? Okay.
Fox News, right?
Yes, he sure is. He sure is, Johnny. So he's kind of like a famousy guy, and I started doing the rounds of everybody's talk shows, and I ended up doing this project about a decade ago called Hot Springs Hotel, and it was for the Showtime Network, and I was doing publicity for it, and I was sent to a sports station, Extra Sports Radio, to appear on a show called The Big Show, which was hosted by a guy named Steve Mason and John Ireland. And that show was simulcast on Fox Sports West 2 and Extra Sports Radio. So it was on TV and it was on radio. They were very impressed with my appearance on their show that they offered me a steady gig without pay where twice a week I would come from 6 to 9 a.m. and I would sit in on their show and look adorable for television. But when they called upon me for radio and for TV, I was ready to go. Whether it was, Sam, did you read the sports pages this morning? Yeah, who do you think is going to win the Norris Trophy? And I would really study, and I'd be like, Rob Blake? And they'd be like, oh! And mind you, this is a long time ago, so I'm literally referencing something from back then. And he was up for the Norris Trophy, and that's for hockey. So I chimed in when appropriate and when called upon, and I definitely learned so much about radio from that experience, and I did it for about a year and a half. And I was the third person or fourth person, you know, third or fourth chair on the show, because it was the two hosts. They always had a celebrity guest, if not two celebrity guests, and then I was the last on the totem pole. So if I were to ever speak, I better freaking pick my moments, and they better be good, because if I F up the flow of these guys' show, they won't ask me back. So it just taught me to pay attention, to speak when spoken to, and then if you're going to interject, it better be a doozy. And from there, I took, you know, that gig dried up, and for whatever reason, they went off of Fox Sports West, and I think they disbanded the show for a while, and then they've gotten back together, and they are still a team. John Ireland and Steve Mason to this day. And I think they're on ESPN, if I'm not mistaken. Not sure. Yes, they are. So anyway, I took all of my emails and all of the fans that had written in. They were always pumping my email and my website. I took a bunch of the cassettes, because that's what we had, the kids had back then, were cassette tapes of the radio show. And I took a bunch of episodes of Hot Springs Hotel, where I looked particularly sexy. And I pitched it to 97.1, but I had a good in because my attorney was the attorney for the general manager of the station. So we both had the same personal attorney. So he made the introduction for me. And when I started radio, I did it with this chick named Sheena Metal. Started radio meaning my own show at 97.1. And, you know, at the time I was floating around not just on the big show, but I also did the show called The Nasty Man. And they had me come in once a week, like on Sunday nights, I think, and participate in their round table of debauchery. And Sheena Metal, this lady, was The Nasty Man's co-host. So long and the short of it, as I always tell a very short, long story, she and he ended up losing their gig at 97.1. They fired the Nasty Man, so then there was no more Sheena Metal on the radio. Her and I stayed in touch, and I'm like, hey, dude, listen, my attorney said that he could probably get me a radio show. He could set up a meeting for us. Let's just go. And I thought, we're like two guys trapped in chicks' bodies, except, you know, I'm a centerfold, and she's like a really fat chick because she's like, you know, 300-plus pounds. And I say that conservative because I'm really thinking she was 400-plus pounds, but I don't want to be rude. So not to say that 300 pounds is fat, but she was more closer rounding four, but whatever. She was not a happy person. She was very bitter, and at the end of the day, she hated my effing guts. She could not stand me and had used me to get back on the radio. Once we were on the radio, that chick tortured me for 3 years solid. And my whole show with her became about her picking on me and me running away from what she was trying to pick on me about. So then I would go to, like, happy places. Like, I'd talk about my vagina, or I'd talk about how many guys I banged that week, or my favorite subject, aliens, or let's talk ass play. And, like, I was, like, the sexual Tourette's chick. Like, whenever she was trying to screw with me, I'd just deflect. And if nothing else, it taught me how to be a good co-host. Because
right
now, I'm the leader. And my guy, who's my co-host on The Single Life, is also a leader. When you have two pilots flying a plane, that means they're going to be jockeying both for pole position. You need one pilot and one co-pilot. So the beauty of learning as a co-pilot and also like a fifth chair co-pilot is to appreciate the co-pilot. So when you are a pilot, you let them speak, and you don't cut them off, and you work in sync with them, and you're a little bit more sensitive to them because you were one, and so on and so on. So my guy, Chris Leary, the guy I have now, is probably the best partner I've ever had on the radio. Him and I have such a great rapport. He picks his moments, but when he speaks, and it's often, they are funny. I mean, like bust my ass funny. So,
you know, it's funny, not to interrupt, but it is true. Like, I've made this comparison, and we actually said this to you on the phone. DT, you don't know that I did this, but DT knows I made this comparison. I've often compared DT to Robin Quivers. You know, I feel like Robin Quivers. And the other night, we were on the phone, you and Sam, you and I, and you laughed, and you said, yep, Chris Leary is my Robin Quivers.
Yes.
We are foil, don't we? I mean, it's way more interesting that way when you have two dynamics going on, or in your case, Sam, you had four or five people ahead of you and what have you. So, yeah, you learn balance. You learn, and you have to, like, super pay attention. You have to be present. You can't be, like, off in la-la land because you'll miss your cue. You'll miss your mark. You'll miss that joke or, you know, your whatever that entree is that you wanted to make. So,
and the cool thing is if you have a good partner and you do miss that cue, because sometimes, you know, when you're doing a live show in a radio studio, I work the phones,
yeah.
I control the calls, I deal and with the pacing and if there's a guest in the studio, and sometimes I will miss something, like something that somebody says that goes right over my head because I'm looking at a screen and trying to figure out, like, you use your breaks wisely. Like, if Chris is talking and engaging with either a caller or the guest,
yeah,
I get a second to kind of look at the screen and see who I want to take next. If this caller is for ass play, I want to maybe take a caller that is completely against it and thinks everybody's going to sin that does it. So that's how you spark, like, the debate. So occasionally, yeah, I will miss something. I'll be like, huh? But again, that's when a good co-host doesn't throw you under the bus. He covers your ass.
Right.
Right.
Did you guys have a producer as well, or someone was putting that information on the screen for you?
I have a call screener that answers all the calls that come in. She types everything up. The screen's in front of me because I'm in, like, the pilot position. And then
right,
Chris.
So you're like the producer saying, okay, I'm going to take call number three or whatever.
Yeah.
You're not taking them in order. You're taking them in order of what you feel is the best fit for the show at that moment.
Yeah, and it's funny because, DT, when I first started leading the show, I was very, like, I'm very sensitive to people. So if I saw nine lines are holding, and one guy's been holding for 18 minutes,
yeah,
and one guy's been holding for 1 minute, and one guy's been holding for 7 minutes, my instinct is to take the guy holding 18 minutes because I don't want to be rude.
Right.
The guy at 18 minutes has something has to say that has nothing to do with the topic or is saying a repetitive thing that was just said by somebody else that I went to first accidentally or whatever. So you get pulled trying to be loyal and nice, but at the end of the day, what's going to make a better show is really the pacing and the timing and the layering of tit for tat, you know, yay and nay. And, like, if I see somebody, like, if a caller just fought with me, right, and I take another call, and there's a whole line of calls that have been waiting, but then somebody gets through, and that person is calling specifically to either have my back or also pick on me, mm-hmm, I will still make those people wait because it's something that just happened, and I'll introduce that caller, even though he's at the end of the queue. It's still for the purposes of the funny or the joke or the bit or the segment, the call's better served immediately rather than making him wait to the time that he would be going if we were going according to how long they're on hold. Does that make sense? So I've got to make these, like, split decisions on the fly and use, like, several parts of my brain at one time, which occasionally you do end up missing something that actually happens in the studio when you do that. But again, that's, I love that challenge. And if you can make it seem seamless, like you're actually paying attention to the caller and setting up the next caller and responding intelligibly, wow. And most nights, that's me.
Well, let me ask you this. There's been, when we first, DT obviously has had, like, for a long time, me, I was talking to DT, and she said there was one, she has a lot of questions, but there's one big question that she's wanted to ask you. You know the question is, right, DT?
I do. Do we want to go off on that topic, or do we want to let Sam finish her?
What do you want to do, Sam? Do you want to finish it?
I'm good with the story. You guys can just poke away at any questions. It's good for me.
You were saying that the woman that you worked with for 3 years, and I guess that ended at some point because you went your separate ways.
Yes, we sure did.
Then the station manager offered you that job solely? Is that how that came about? Or
no, actually, I quit my own show. I couldn't handle it. You know, sometimes you just have to walk away.
Uh-huh.
And I really wrestled with it because she, to me, I don't mean to be melodramatic, but she represented evil and I represented good. And I felt that every minute that I was on the air with her, I was like the good battling the evil. And I just couldn't handle the battle anymore, and I stepped back. And I often wondered, like, did I do the wrong thing? Like, I should have continued battling that dragon. But for my own mental health, it was just an unhealthy relationship. She was very, she played a lot of mental games. I just was not happy. I was not happy at all. She was saying weird shit on the air. Excuse me, I don't know if I can curse on the show. So she was just, I had to get away. Overwhelmingly, it's like fight or flight, and the flight kicked in, and the fight had been there, but the flight was there. And it all culminated with, I went to Hawaii to star and assistant direct a movie for 10 days, And it took me over, like, it was like a Monday to like a Thursday the following week. So it took me over a weekend, and her and I were doing a Friday and a Saturday shift. 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. So I'd worked out, you know, nothing's worse than having somebody piped in from a landline in Hawaii co-hosting a show with you. So, like, you'd have to three-way all the callers. And the generation of hearing me on a phone for 4 hours and her in a studio, it just, I know it doesn't sound good. So, but what I did want to do is call in the first hour of the, both nights for like 5-10 minutes and just give like a, hey, everybody, I'm in Hawaii. These are the hot chicks working on this B-movie with me. Don't you all wish I was here? You know, do my Sam shtick.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I don't know what went on, but I went to call in on the first night, and she, the guy who was phone screening was actually a guy named Malibu Dan that worked for a team here in L.A. called Conway and Steckler.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he worked a little bit with Conway and Whitman, and then Dan left 97.1. But he was answering the phones way back when I first started the station. And he was going to pass that duty over to our phone screener, and my Sheena was in his phone screener room when I called looking for her, because she never touched base with me with what the topic was that she was going to be talking about. I wanted to at least be informed of, like, you know, what are you doing with my show that I got you for 4 hours when I'm not here? Just, by the way, I'd kind of like to know. Check in with me. And she didn't. And she got on the phone with me and basically said that she was not authorized to put me on the air. And I'm like, what do you mean you're not authorized to put me on it? And I was like, bitch, this is my freaking show. What do you mean you're not authorized? What? And she hung up on me.
Ooh.
So I was like, wow. She C-blocked me off my own show. So I called our boss at the time and was like, what the F is going on? Why am I not authorized to call into my own show for 2 minutes from Hawaii? I do not understand. And he never got back to me that weekend. Not Friday, not Saturday, not Sunday. And I quit my own show Monday. I was like, you know what? You guys want
that's
this
terrible. I mean, it is true. It's almost like if you're not going to have some respect, I mean, you know, I mean, like, that's just, that.
You know what? If he had made an executive decision like, Sam, it's just not going to sound good. I prefer that you just, you know, skip the call in from Hawaii. If that came from him, coolio. That's my boss. I would never question my boss. But she basically told me to go F myself, and she had the most delight in saying, you know, oh, you know, I'm not authorized to put you on air. And I was like, you know what? That's bull. And you know what, sweetie? You've been wanting this show all to yourself for the last, oh, I don't know, since the beginning. It's yours, honey. You want me gone? And she would say, like, I wish you were dead. And, like, she was saying weird, trippy crap on the radio. And I just had it. I'm like, this chick clearly doesn't want to work with me anymore. She can't stand me. And if she's going to make my life miserable this badly, let her freaking have it. Let her have it. And whatever's going to happen will happen. Whatever's meant to be will be. But step back, girl. Step back. And I did. And I got to tell you, I was not on the radio for 2 years, and I was miserable. Miserable. And I double-questioned, should I have done that? Was I, like, being like a baby and stomping my feet and throwing in my hat, you know, throwing in the towel and grabbing my marbles and leaving the, you know, the playground? Like, did I cut off my nose to spite my face? But honestly, I got to tell you, yes and no, because I could not go on another weekend with her. I could not. Without somebody backing me up, I could not. I just couldn't, and I wasn't getting it. So you know what happened?
I know how dedicated you are and how loyal you are and how you pull it at the last minute, the last hour, whatever. You're the captain that jumps off the ship the very last. So for you to get to the point where you had to go in and quit on Monday, then I'm sure you dotted your I's and, crossed your T's and all that stuff before you even did such a thing. So never look down on that. And you know what? Your own personal happiness and peace of mind isn't worth any horrible situation like that. So you did the right thing ultimately.
And I said,
I'm sure DP would have done the same thing. I mean, that's crazy. That's like saying that's like telling Regis, I'm sorry, Regis, you can't come in today,
Yeah, with no warning, no explanation. I mean, it's BS. It was BS for your manager to act the way that he did, too.
Well, I think he was it was the weekend, and he turned his phone off, and he heard, what's going on? And he told me in the aftermath, because he became my boss again, FYI. He told me in the aftermath, he just heard my tone of voice and hit erase, erase, erase. And didn't even listen to them.
Wow.
And you know what?
I get it.
At the same time, I do understand. He's got bigger fish to fry than some weekend, chick going, rant, rant, rant. I was, cock-blocked off my own show, rant, rant, rant. I mean, I understand. To him, it was stupid. Just get over it. Grow some balls, babe. Buck up. This is radio. Crap like this happens all the time, which is true. But you know what? I didn't need to hear it from her, and somebody could have told me if that were the case, and I would have been cool. I just felt out of the loop and disrespected, like you said.
Yeah.
So, I went away. And you know what happened? 2 years later, not even, they paired her with somebody else, and they paired her with somebody else. I think they tried her with two different people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what happened. They let her go. I know she didn't go on her own. But she was no longer there, and then Jack, my boss, we spoke and reconnected, and then he gave me the single life with my then-partner, Gary Garver, who I started doing it with before my guy now, Chris.
Now, just out of curiosity, I mean, when you do the radio, I mean, I noticed that you do kind of you come across as relaxed. But if you kind of get ready, like for instance, I could not do. I mean, when I go on the radio, I'm a prepare freak, or at least I try to be a prepare freak. Because when I'm not, I sort of fall over.
Yeah.
Sam, do you like to go off the cuff, or do you have articles or subject matter that's prepared in advance of your show?
It's funny. It depends. I've walked in there literally with a piece of paper and one sentence, which was the name of my topic.
Uh-huh.
And usually in that case, it was something that was a personal experience that happened to me that I'm parlaying and turning into a topic. So I don't really need to make notes or write notes because I could talk about that for hours. So I just need to know the succinct way to pose a topic. And I might even write it 2, 3, 4 different ways. And just, throw them around in different manners. Boobs all this hour. How do you like them? Big or small? Real or fake? Give us a call. Blah, blah, blah. Or breasts. Would you kick a fake one out of bed? I don't know. What do you say? 520? You know what I mean? You just throw it out in a different way. Otherwise, it sounds repetitive and boring. So I might do that. Write a couple of different catchphrases, catchy taglines for it, and that's about it. Then if it's something that's out of the news, if it's like the Chris Brown Rihanna thing, I'll have, the current article off of TMZ or The Drudge or Perez Hilton or, any one of my news sources that I go online. Or sometimes I'll even grab a Star magazine or a People, and there's just a really good story, but it's something that everybody can relate to because it's happened to everybody, but now it's being talked about because two famous people, it's happening to them. So that gives you, the double layer. If you were so-and-so and so-and-so, what would you do? And then, has that ever happened to you, L.A.? Have you ever experienced blank, blank, blank? Give us a call. So I like those topics, too, but they're more opinion on – I don't know. It just depends. It's me giving an opinion on something that's not relating to me, whereas what I found over doing radio for years and years and years, what people actually want to hear from a talk radio host is personal stories about them that's revealing, titillating, inflaming, entertaining. They like to hear your opinions on other stuff, but they want to hear stories, and especially if they're good stories and if you're a good storyteller. That's why Howard became so successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Howard, you know, it's funny because, like, it was can I bring up that the question now, DT, or?
Sure. We're gonna do a segue, if that's okay, and go
off
topic here. But it's something
I wanted to bring it up before I forgot. But when I first told you about my host's username, the pin name that she goes by, DT, you thought it was a sex position.
No, you're so funny. No. I did not think it was a sex position. You're so funny.
You said, DT, is that a sex position? Well, this sort of leads way into this next question. Now, and I don't want to just dwell on this, but Sam, okay, you know the question I'm talking about, right, DT?
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask it? Or?
Go right ahead.
Okay.
I bought her here. I wanted to make sure you ask it.
All right. For those listeners out there who don't know, I write a dating column, a blog called Dating Tips for Men. And I started this blog site only for men, that men could write me questions about dating and women, and then it just kind of like evolved, and it got really popular, and it ended up on the most popular blog list of MySpace and blah, 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 and it just grew and grew and grew. And then from there, I actually ended up doing a lot of research. I interviewed 20,000 men on various topics about dating, women, sex, this, that, and the other, and I wrote a book. So my book is now done after all this time, and it's at the editor, and hopefully we're putting together the final manuscript, and then it'll be ready to go to publishing soon. But one thing I heard on your radio show, Sam, and I don't know if people know your background, but I guess you were in the adult entertainment area, and you often, like, say, you know, how many men you've gone to bed with, and the number is pretty sizable. So I don't know if you mind my mentioning what the number is. I think
you mean the 500 plus guys,
500 men, so on and so forth. So it's in my experience, with my research, with my interviewing these 20,000 men, I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from my research, I would say that the most favored position that men have is doggy style. And I think there's no coincidence to that. I think it goes back to caveman days, to when we were quadrupeds, when we were on all fours, and much like a dog, that was the only mode of entry because he needed to have all fours on the ground, so to speak. And even though we're, you know, now erect and standing on 2 feet, still to this day it's just genetically predisposed, that's the position that men feel they have the best access, and it's easy for them and gives them a lot of control, et cetera, et cetera. So on your show, you said that you actually like missionary, which
yes.
I found that for someone who's in the adult world.
No, but wait. I gotta stop you because you keep saying that.
Yeah.
I've never done a porn. I'm not a porn star. My adult performance is pretty much posing in Penthouse magazine, June of 1993,
okay.
and starring in Hot Springs Hotel on Showtime, and reporting for Sexcetera on the Playboy Channel, and producing Busty Cops, a line of B movies. But they're all simulated. All the stuff I've done is simulated.
Okay, but your personal experience. Okay, then.
I just wanted to clarify because if you think of like a porn star and, you know, their positions and their experience, I mean, that's like a lot of positions and a lot of experience. And I'm a civilian, although I've had a lot of experience too.
Right. Okay. So thank you for correcting me on that.
Personal
experience, you're claiming 500 men, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
Men, right? So my thinking is that someone who, a woman who has done it that many times, probably she's going to get a good handle on various different sex positions, you know, 20, 30, 40 different sex positions. And you would not necessarily think that missionary would be at the top of the list.
Well, here's
so
the thing,
DJ. I wanted to ask you why that is, because I really, if you were to ask me personally, I think that missionary is the most favored position among women. They just don't tell men that.
Well, because men think it's boring, but here's the thing. That's where a chick's G-spot is. I hate to tell you.
Yeah.
The way I have an orgasm 9, 10 out of 10 times is entering me as I'm in a missionary position, and you're very close, and you're, you know, barely putting it in, boom, like not too far in, there is the G-spot. You don't hit the same position when you're in doggy. You don't hit the same position when you're in cowgirl, reverse cowgirl, spooning, standing, sheep. I have one called sheep. You don't have those same, it's not the same contact. It doesn't hit the same spot. So I'm the type of girl that I will give you 4 hours of oral. I will bang you forever. I will do everything for the longest time ever, but when I want to orgasm, I don't want to F around. I just want to get to it. And I can continue going after that, but when I want to do it, I know my position. It's missionary. So I will assume that first so I can have my orgasm, and then I'll play around. I don't want to do all the positions first because I kind of lose it in a way. I can't explain it. Like, I just want to, like, guys, they want to have their orgasm, and then they can go for forever after that or whatever everybody's, like, little pattern and deal is. But for me, it's missionary. Now, here's the thing, what you say about guys. I just did this topic on the Single Life TV show, and it aired, I do believe, 2 weeks ago. And it was, what's your favorite sex position? I had a celebrity chiropractor come on, and we talked about various different positions, what's good if you have back injury, what's good if you're a short guy, what's good if you have a huge rack and they're heavy, your boobs. Like, you know, I'm thinking of, like, all the typical things that people have to go through that in dealing with sex. You hurt yourself, you know, in her practice, how many people walk through her door that have actually hurt themselves during sex? 40%.
Wow.
So, and it's always trying a position that they don't normally do. And they pull something, they hurt their back, they hurt their knee, they do something to where they end up going to a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my co-host, Chris Leary, what's your favorite position? And he was not into the doggy at all. He's like, I say missionary. No. What he liked was to be on the bottom. And I'm like, clearly, because you're lazy. And I have a theory that the guys that just like to lay there and have the girls do all the work, they're lazy.
Yeah.
I dated a guy like that. He was an a-hole. He liked to lay there, and he wanted me to bounce around on him because he was L-A-Z-Y.
Uh-huh.
But then again, the same could be said for me, assuming the missionary. Lazy. But here we go. I was dating this guy a while ago, not that long ago, and the 12 times or so that we did it, you know, I would do the marathon oral. I would, you know, play around, and he'd go down on me, and we'd do all our stuff. And then I would want to assume my missionary to have my orgasm, and then whatever you want to do to me after that, fine. And he said, like, on, like, the 12th time, before I even did it, and he's English, so I cannot recreate that, but he's like, are you going to lay on your back again? It's kind of boring. Boring. And I'm like, boring? Wait, whoa, boring? And that's why I'm saying guys think it's boring. They do. And they also feel like they have to do all the work. And again, you need to be sort of in good shape. You need to, you know, have some breathing power, some stamina. A lot of guys don't. You know, they want to be on the bottom and have the girl do all the work. That's why, you know, oral blowjobs are so popular, is because the guy doesn't have to do much. The girl does everything.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, and to hear your answer on this question was just so refreshing and so truthful that I rarely hear this answer, even though it's true. I think it's true, but it's sort of like taboo for the girl to say she likes missionary because the guy doesn't like that. So she's just appeasing the guy, saying, oh, yes, I love doggy, or oh, yes, I love, you know, scissors, or oh, yes, I love, you know, cowgirl or whatever, just to, like, shut the guy up. But it's not true.
You know, it's funny, DT, because the same idiot, the same, you know, number 12 guy doing it the 12 times, he's like, you're not going to assume the boring missionary. And I'm like, okay, fine. What would you like me to do, buddy? And please do not say any position with me is boring because you can get the F out of my bed. And
yeah.
He's like, no. I'm like, so what would you like? So he had me do a reverse cowgirl where I was sitting on top of him. He was laying down. And my knees were, like, underneath me along sides of his body, like, inverting, turning my knees kind of in. My whole pelvis was turned in. It effed my knee up, DT, my right knee. To this day, I still going to the chiropractor because I did a position I don't normally do, and my knee is still screwed up, still screwed up to my right knee. I tweaked it. I ripped it. I torqued it. I did something, and I remember going, I'm sorry, dude, you have to, I had to have him, like, physically move me out of that position. I couldn't even move.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, see, missionary, you couldn't just do missionary.
And
God, how about trying to make me happy?
And whatever happened about the guy thing where the guy gets off on getting his woman off, don't you know? I mean, it's like, if it's missionary, then you get to watch the whole show, so to speak.
Yeah, but you know what? You're assuming that the guy is assuming that the chick is his woman. Yeah, a guy that's with a girl gets off on that. But a guy that's just hooking up with a girl doesn't care if the girl's getting off. He wants to get off.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of hooking up with guys where it's just casual. Not casual where I don't know their name, but like casual where there's no strings attached and I see them once a month and it just so happens that everybody fits in a slot and nobody overlaps and but nobody's, you know, no one's looking to marry me and I'm not looking to marry anybody either.
Uh-huh.
So.
Okay. I have another one for you that just came out when you were talking about this question. You said that you like missionary because it hits that certain spot, and that's the spot that you kind of, I agree with you, by the way, because I have that same spot too, and it that same spot does not get hit in many of the other different angles. I mean, occasionally, once in a blue moon, you can hit it, but I agree. It's like missionary for me, from the woman's point of view, it's sort of like tried and true. It's like a guaranteed thing. You do it from that position, it just works. The other positions, you sort of have to work at it and, like, go into fantasy land and, like, you know, convince your mind to do it and, like, everything else.
You said it right. You're doing it for the guy. You're doing it to get them off. It's not really what gets us off.
Right.
And also, I'll give you another thing. I like small penises.
Okay, yeah, wait. That brings me to what you said a moment ago, my next question. You were saying that you like the missionary because it hits that certain spot and the guy only has to be in, like, a few inches. He hits that certain spot. So my question now is, what about that it's all over the internet, it's all that comes out of women's mouth these days, I need a guy with a big dick, I need a guy with 8 inches, 10 inches, blah, blah, blah. So how does that hold with your theory that technically, really, when you look at the, you know, the research on this, a woman really only needs 3 inches. I mean, granted, we're not going to like 3-inch cocks, but the spot, the joy spot that we're talking about is only 3 inches in.
But here's the thing, DT,
so,
and I believe this. You know how penises are different lengths and widths and sizes?
Yeah.
So are vaginal canals. And I do know some women that can take 10 inches. Me, 7 inches, it hits my cervix, and I shoot up the bed, like, screaming in pain. So if I'm with a guy with a big dick, I can't take it all in. And I've actually even got to put my hand on their stomach to stop them from, like, pulverizing me. Serious.
Right.
Like, you know, because, you know, when they start in a rhythm and they start pounding away, you can pound, like, 1 pound too deep. And then, you know, that you're, like, dying in pain. So I do believe that internally different women are built differently and some have more room. I'll give you an example. You probably heard of this lady, Bridget the Midget. She's a porn star, literally a porn star, who is a small person who goes by the name Bridget the Midget, so I'm not being disparaging. And she only bangs I don't want to say normal-sized people, but the, quote, normal-sized person, 5'8", 9", 10", 6 foot, with humongous penises. So my question is, where is it going? If she's not that tall, that thing's got to be coming out of her throat if it's entering in her vagina. Where does it go? Where does it go? She's clearly got to have, like, just one long canal on the inside of her.
Oh my God, it's like, you know, plumbed all the way to China and back or something. I don't know.
Yes.
That's funny. Even
but I mean,
it's the magic of, you know, videotape or whatever, where they can cut and paste and do whatever they want to do.
No. You see her taking a large cock, dude.
Wow.
You do. And if you would go by the ratio of how tiny she really is, she's probably like 3 foot something. She's
right.
Tiny, dude. So
yeah.
You would think that it would only be like 2 inches, her vaginal canal, or 3 inches. It ain't. That's going somewhere, dude. So
yeah.
Even lending more credence to my theory that it doesn't matter how big you are. Like, I'm 5'9", but my canal is not longer than 7 inches. It's just not.
Yeah.
Like, 5-6 inches is perfect for me. Fat. I like them fat, too.
Yeah.
Fat and body and fat and penis.
Oh, fat and body, really?
Not, like, overtly fat, but, like, you know, I like meaty.
Something
I like
to hold
it
on to, huh?
And I like them,
pounds, right?
And I like them over 6 foot. You know,
I
like
have
to,
a height thing too.
I need to feel protected. I'm 5'9". You know, I just want to know that if anything ever were to be, you know, going down, that the guy that I'm banging can completely tackle and annihilate the threat.
I agree.
And you know, throw me over his shoulder and squire me away to safety.
Yep.
Like the cavemen.
There you go. I love it.
Yep.
So do you think it's a common street myth that women keep saying, oh, we have to have, you know, extra large cock, blah, blah, blah? I think it's a myth. I think they're just saying it, I don't know, to turn the guy on or make them feel inferior, or I don't know what it is, but I don't think it's true.
I think it's partially true, and I think it's partially talk. I think some of them really do like a big one, and I think some of them say what they think guys want to hear.
Yeah, that's what I think's going on.
But if you look at it from a guy's perspective, he's probably going to think that girl's easy. Like, oh, what, she wants a big dick to stretch her out? Can you imagine how stretched out that, you know, when they stick their hands and go, and they pretend they're in their vagina? You know, when they talk about being with a chick that has, like, a humongous hole because they've been plugged 1,000 times? I would assume that's what guys would think. If a girl continually said, oh, I like a big dick, and I like a big dick, you would think, like, well, how big is your vagina that a big dick fits?
Yeah, meaning that you have to have a big dick at this point because you've done it too many times. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, your vagina is obviously so big that you can only feel it with a big dick.
Right,
which means, and, you know, the bigger a hole is or the bigger something is, you assume the more it's been utilized.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that it would be less attractive to a guy. But then again, how many men out there have big dicks? I mean, I wonder what the percent is. I'm sure,
very,
you know,
small. It's very small. It's nowhere near, I mean, it's like, you know, what, 5% or something have dicks that are over 8 inches. And the other cool thing is, 80% of men have a 6-inch dick, which is perfect.
I know, you're telling me why you think 80%. I've been so active.
So for the guy to be 6 inches, 6 1/4, 6 1/2, all the way up to 7, I mean, that's like ideal. Actually, from 6 inches to 8 inches is ideal. Over 8 inches for most women is no longer ideal. It hurts. Mm-hmm. And like you say, you got to do kind of maneuvers to, like, you know, not have it go all the way in because it hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. We agree. What's your favorite size, DT?
You know, 6 to 8, you know, and more importantly than length, and I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Sam, but is the girth to me.
Yes.
I like it thick. I had one guy who had lots of length, but it was skinny. That was the creepiest feeling I have ever felt in my whole life. I could not wait to get out of there. It felt like a hot dog. I mean, it was horrible.
You know, it's
I like
funny.
That feeling full thing, you know? I mean, I want the circumference of my vagina to feel it.
Yeah.
So I didn't like the long, and he could take his long and go someplace else with it because it was the worst feeling ever.
You know, it's funny. I dated this guy, we'll just say I banged him. I'm being nice. I dated him. Okay, I banged him. No, I went out on a couple of dates with him. His penis, I refer to it as the furry churro. You know what a churro is? That long, skinny thing?
The Mexican sweet, it's kind of like a donut, but it's long and thin.
Like really thin.
Yeah.
Like super thin.
Yeah.
But long.
Long and thin like a churro.
Yes, and then he had a ton of pubic hair.
Oh, God.
And it kind of came up his shaft a little bit, so I just called him the furry churro. And I went on one date with him and did not, you know, fool around. And then the second date we did, and I was like, oh, no. Not that there's anything wrong with the furry churro. I didn't like him overall. The penis was just an excuse. But if he was really, really cool, I would have overlooked. I overlook flaws, or what I consider to be a flaw, if the person's really nice,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
I'm into the person, not so much the, you know, the looks or the penis size per se.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to kick a big dick out of bed, but you know, I don't know. It's really for me more the person. That's what turns me on, is the intelligence. And the humor, how much that person makes me laugh and how much that person makes me think turns me on way more than any other thing.
Yep, I would tend to agree with that, and I think a lot of women would agree with that. I think men are much more visually oriented. They want to, like, see an attractive woman. That's, like, number one on their list. But women, not so much. You know, that you often see, like, a really drop-dead gorgeous girl with some short, fat, squatty guy that you wouldn't even look twice at.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to say something. You mentioned this to me one time, though, about sense of humor, how you thought that was a standard thing. Now, what's your opinion on that?
Are you asking me or Sam?
Well, I'm asking both of you, because maybe Sam would like to get an opinion on it.
I think if you were to ask women, like, what is, like, top of their list, almost invariably the top two or three personality traits is, I have to have a guy that makes me laugh.
Yes, look, humor, and intelligence.
I'm always surprised at that answer because I think most guys are funny. And for the longest time, I didn't used to think that way. And then I turned the mirror back on myself, and it was because I was, at the time, I was such a stick in the mud. I was such a whatever, that I had, once I loosened up, then I saw how funny men were. And then not only was I cracking up at their jokes, I was like making, you know, my jokes, and we'd feed off of each other and it would be all great. But it was a reflection on me that I didn't have that sense of humor. And until I got it, then I thought, heck, most of the male population is very funny.
Yeah. Chauvinistic. And funny, and, you know, crass, and not, you know, women weren't really brought up to appreciate that humor. We were taught, you know, society says, you know, that's inappropriate.
Right.
Me, I've made a living off of being inappropriate, quite frankly.
Right.
Saying and doing absolutely everything inappropriate. So, kids, don't listen to your parents. I didn't listen to mine. And look at me now.
You know, what she said, Sam, I mean, you think most men are funny?
Yeah, because I feel like I'm like a guy, so I get it. I get their jokes. I get the humor. I get the, they're way more disgusting than us. Us meaning chicks. But
mm-hmm.
I get all of that. I appreciate it. I think it's kind of funny. So I do think guys generally are, for the most part, unless they just are devoid of any type of personality, which there's a ton of those too, antisocial
yes.
people,
mm-hmm.
there's a ton of them, but for the most part, and I always tell guys that, your best in with a chick at a bar is find something fucking funny and comment about it, and if you can make her laugh about anything, then you've got her, at least for a drink, and then that's the rest is up to you, bud.
Right.
You know?
Do you consider humor an important part of romance?
Oh, God, I would never date a guy that that did not get my humor or didn't have a sense of humor. I just couldn't. I mean, maybe once when I was younger or a couple of times I banged guys that had no personality. I call it personality, the whole wrap-up of having that outgoing nature. And humor is definitely, you can't really be outgoing without having a sense of humor, because then that's just plain obnoxious.
That is true. Yeah, otherwise you're just going to, you know, you're going to be outgoing, and then when somebody else tries to make a joke, you're not going to take it.
Right, exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, my God, like we all agree.
So before we run out of time, Sam, we should probably, you know, Johnny and I know you from The Single Life from 97.1, and as you know, I don't know what parts of the country did hear that station versus didn't, but that station is no longer in existence. The station still is there. They underwent a format change, and you kind of got the axe with that format change. I wanted to have you bring the audience up to speed as to what happened then, what are you doing now, give us your links and your, you know, what you're up to now, whatever you want to promote and your website, all that kind of stuff. So why don't you take it away from there?
Oh, thanks, DT. Well, lucky for me, I was one of the few people that sort of landed right on my feet when they had changed the format back in February. In January, I got an offer from a network, an HD network, that is carried on every subscriber except DirecTV. They haven't worked out their deal with DirecTV yet. They've been in existence for 4 years. It's called MAV, like a Maverick, MAV TV. They're on, I know they're nationally on Dish Network on channel 361, on Fios. They're nationally on like 548 or 545 or something. Time Warner, Comcast, Cox, Charter. It's like different area by area on different channels. It's not like national all one channel. They are an HD network. They are a premium package subscription network, so you'd have to have like your HD premium package of your cable subscriber to get MAV TV, but they're in 30 million homes, and they basically asked if I could executive produce my own TV show, and if they could give me X amount of money, could I make them 26 half-hour shows? And I was like, hell yeah. And what it is I took The Single Life, the radio show, and put it on television the same way Howard Stern did. But actually, if I do dare say, I think my show is better. Not to say that my radio show is better, but my TV show is better. I have more elements and more cool crap going on with mine. So I just... This one,
You there?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you're right. Howard Stern seems to be more political now, but go on with what you're saying.
Okay, so... long and the short of it, I went to 97.1. I was like, look, I got this deal from a great cable network. They basically want to hand me a bunch of money to make TV shows based on my radio show. What do you say, guys? What do you say? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. So as I was negotiating that whole deal, I got a call on a Wednesday. Hey, buddy, by the way, as of Friday, we're no longer a talk station. So you might want to look into finding another home. And I'm like, wow, but what about that TV deal that I'm negotiating with you guys right now? What happens with that? And I was told, well, you know, good luck on your search for a new radio home. So what I ended up doing was I rented a syndicator facility called CRN Digital Talk Radio, and they're really cool. What they are is on every TV subscriber, every TV carrier, like DirecTV, Dish, Time Warner, everybody, they've got a music choice section on your channels, like in your 900s, where it's like jazz and pop and rock and, you know, rap and every music choice, you know, the music choice section.
Are you talking about it's like a radio station but on your TV?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's talk radio on television. So I rented that place out, and I filmed all 26 of my TV shows. I'm now editing them. And we are on TV every Friday night, debuts a new Single Life with Sam Phillips show on MAV TV at 8:30 Pacific Central time, my time, and then 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. I'm on episode 12 of the 26, and I have two celebs in every show. Our first show was Lorenzo Lamas was my guest, and we talked about can you stay friends with your ex, and Jackie the Joke Man Martling did my shout-out. Another one was Isai Morales was my guest. We talked about who's got the control in a relationship, men or women. Pauly Shore was my celebrity shout-out. My show last week, Shawnee Smith from the Saw movies and Missy Pyle from Galaxy Quest and a whole bunch of other movies, they were my guests. We talked about how to handle a breakup. And Lou Ferrigno and his wife Carla were my shout-outs. So I power-pack them with celebs. They're so spectacular. I have a whole hot crew. I have a hot intern who's the Penthouse Pet of the Year runner-up for 2000, Alexis Winston. I have a hot producer, Gina Grad. I have a hot phone screener, Yanira Johnson. I have a really cool board op, George Corona. I've got a little assistant, Monkey, and his name's Monkey. So I've got, like, a whole crew, and every episode, you see what everybody's doing in the crew. You see everybody doing their job, and there's always, like, some drama. So you get a little bit, a smorgasbord of everything. You see the celeb behind the scenes in the green room, like Stern. But I just add more to it, and it's all packed into a half-hour show. And it's really exciting. I edit pretty much every day working on it. And what I've been doing is I've been pitching the radio show to a couple of different places and working on putting it back on the radio with the whole syndication deal connected with it, and that's looking pretty good. In the meantime, I took the whole show to iTunes, and iTunes is the next great wave of syndication, I got to say. It's an uncensored, explicit version of the Single Life radio show that you would hear on radio, because, of course, we have the FCC regulations. On the Single Life podcast, it's no holds barred. It is the most taboo, crazy topics. I'm getting about 80,000 downloads a show a week.
Wow.
And it's doing really good. So I do about anywhere from 2 to 4 podcasts a week, and everybody from the crew is involved, and we all talk about our personal lives, and it's pretty funny. If you go to thesinglelife.radioshow.com, you can check out all those shows, the CRN MAV shows, 97.1 shows. We have polls. I sell crap. You can bid to be a guest on The Single Life. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. And then if anybody wants to email me, it's thesinglelife.radioshow@gmail.com. What else? You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/thesinglelife.
I'm sorry, give out your email address once more.
thesinglelife.radioshow@gmail.com.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Very
so
cool.
So I'm just, you know, working on the TV show, working on getting a syndication deal, doing my, you know, uncensored podcast every week, keeping in touch. Oh, on Facebook, if any of you guys are on Facebook, I'm under as The Single Life, or you can search Sam Phillips, but you might get this kid in Nebraska who I'm going to kick his ass for stealing my name. So I am, no, but that's a whole story. It's a whole, it's a joke, kid in Nebraska, I'm not really going to kick your ass. I want my name back, though, damn it. But it's under The Single Life. So, you know, reach out, be my friend on Facebook. We have tons of photos, updates, all kinds of stuff.
So the podcast is a different show, different broadcast than what you're producing for the TV, right?
Oh, yeah. It is a completely explicit version with all the same people, but just no limits.
So if you had certain guests on, those same guests would be on your podcast as well, right? You just
No, they're completely separate. They're done in separate places. Like, the radio show would be done in a studio. The podcast is actually done at this one guy, Randy Wang's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a very casual podcast apartment feel. And it's very – there is no structure to it. And normally I'm all about structure. It's one topic, 1 hour. We beat the S out of it. We hammer every different way to dissect it. We go off in, you know, little tangents, but always come back to it. You know, I pick topics that you can go off and come back, but you always come back. On the podcast, you literally talk about 20 different topics in an hour and a half. You don't stick on any one thing. You stick on it for as long as everybody's really talking about it, but you don't try and push it. You don't reset because people are downloading it. They know who you are. So I don't have to keep going, oh, you're listening to the Single Life podcast. I'm Sam Phillips. That's George Corona. That's Monkey. So what we do instead is just when we talk, it's like, hey, Monkey, what do you think of blah, 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 blah? And then, you know, we try and use each other's names when we address each other.
Right.
Just so people
tuned in late or something?
Or no, because you can't tune in late. You're downloading it. So
oh,
you're tuning
okay.
in
so
from
it's
the beginning.
Not, it's, for the listener, it's not live time.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's, yeah. So, and it's really, it's an amazing tool to keep in touch with everybody. I get tons of emails. People write me advice like, Sam, will you give me advice? This is what I'm going through. I read the emails on the podcast. My whole crew, we sit and dissect it. And a lot of times, and here's a tip for anybody that's going to email me, give me as much information as possible. Because what we end up doing is somebody will write me, what should I do about this girl that I'm dating? He'll give me very little information about a paragraph long. If you and the gang could, you know, give me some advice, I'd love it. So what happens is we don't know what the story is, so we start hypothetically guessing. Well, maybe she's gay. Oh, yeah, and maybe blah, 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 blah. So we start, you know, going off, and it's so funny. Like, when we're done, we've concocted this whole story for this guy, but it's probably none of it is true, but we don't have any information to go on. So we end up hypothesizing what it could be. Could it be this? Oh, no, 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 it could be that. No, 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 it could be that. So giving us information totally helps. Otherwise, we just turn it into a free-for-all.
I am so glad to hear that you are on TV now, because when I first started listening to you and then I went to the 97.1 website, I think it was, and I saw your pictures, and I'm a straight chick, I nearly fell off my chair. You are drop-dead gorgeous. You're so gorgeous. And I thought, why are they wasting your talent with being on the radio? You need to have the visual to go along with it. So I'm very happy for you, and I hope this venture will be a great, great success, and hopefully we can bring some new listeners to your audience.
I would love that, you guys, and I will bring new listeners to your guys' audience, too. I will post it on my Facebook. I have the link, Johnny. I'll get it out there and tell everybody I'm on your guys' show.
Awesome.
Right. I was going to say, before we go, because we've been on an hour, you know, I think sometimes radio, I'm not saying everybody does this, but this regulations with everything, it's almost like treating adults like children. Like, I'm not saying that this is anything that you did, but one time I was listening to your show and you said, well, you know, when you call in, make believe you're talking to your doctor. And
I did.
I just thought that's such a she's a grown woman. Don't, you know, make her act like that. I mean.
But here's the thing, Johnny. You know, here's the thing. Say a mother is driving in her car, and she just picked up the kids from school, and the kid, and she's got it on some jazz station, and the kid in the passenger seat reaches over, turns the dial, it ends up on 97.1, and I'm saying some explicit, outrageous, questionable comment that this mother now has to explain to her child, and she calls in and complains. So you have to take into account that we have to talk like children, because guess what? When it's a free radio like that, children can tune in. So we always have to be aware that there's a child in the room, unfortunately.
That you're not a child, you're an adult. I mean, it just seems like it'd be nice to put you in a position where you can actually talk more, you know, like yourself, and not have to feel like, you know, well, nothing against children, but you know, just kind of say what I'm saying, right, Sam?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I wish those little effers weren't listening to the gosh darn radio.
Remember when Tom Likas on Thursdays, when he used to have Likas 101, he would have 13-year-olds call.
Oh, I know. You know what, though? The Single Life, I'm telling you guys, I get 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds and 15. I used to get this kid that was like 8, and he would call my show. And I was like, does your father know that you know how to use a phone? How are you making this phone call? And the kid put the father on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of kids call and I've made them put their fathers on.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of actually funny. One guy had no idea his kid was calling, and one guy I'm convinced set his kid up to call.
Yeah, I would say probably the latter is probably the more common thing.
Yeah, yeah, but there was definitely a guy who had no idea his kid was calling.
Wow.
I was like, hey, you got a smart kid, though. I'm telling you, if your kid's listening to my show, I'd go have a conversation with your kid. Your kid could teach you a thing or two.
Definitely.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's been really great having you both on, and it's really great to finally get you that interview, DT. She's wanted it for some time.
I know. Thank you guys so much, and I'm sorry. You know, we had an aborted attempt last week. It was completely my fault. But,
okay.
You know, good things are made to wait, or whatever that saying is, and here we are.
Yep. And here we are.
We'll talk to you both later, okay?
Okay, bye, Johnny. Bye, DT. It was so nice hanging out with you guys.
It was really fun to hang out with you, too. And look for my book. It's called The Formula. It should be coming out in a few months. And if you want to find me or send me an email, my blogs are on myspace.com/datingtipsformen, F-O-R, men. And send me an email. Hop on the blogs. Have fun.
Hey, DT, right. If you're ever in L.A., you need to come on my podcast.
Absolutely, I will. I totally will. We'll have to
too, Johnny,
have Johnny exchange
too.
Numbers.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.